Greetings, comrades, and thankfully, we are all still alive. I was pretty worried watching the events come in over the last 10 hours or so. So as you guys know, I've been really struggling to get shit together this year, and really struggling to get out another podcast. And right now, on the brink of World War III, seems like the best time to sit down and talk about what the hell is happening. So, yeah, in the last little while, things have gotten pretty wild, and we're going to go through it as best as we can, but let's talk about what we know in the immediate term as I'm coming to you guys. Right now, it's April 19th, and I'm recording at 7 in the morning. All right, so let's talk about what's going on. I'm going to bring to you guys the first article that I was able to see and was able to read about what has happened over the last sort of 10 hours. So right now, here we go. We have Israel strikes Iran, defense officials confirm. And by the way, this is from the Jerusalem Post. So let's go through what they have to say. Long distance aircraft fired missiles that struck Iranian Air Force assets at Ashafan in central Iran early Friday morning, the Jerusalem Post has confirmed. Meanwhile, two Israeli defense officials and three Iranian officials confirmed to the New York Times that Israel was involved. The report came after local sources reported explosions in the Ashafan region in central Iran. A U.S. official then told CNN that the Iranian target was not nuclear. Videos from Ashafan appeared to show Iranian air defenses activated in the skies over the area. A senior U.S. official has also confirmed on Friday morning of the attack, stating, "We are not surprised," while also telling Walla that Israel has informed the U.S. in advance of the strike. So this story was very early. We've had a little bit more information come since this story has been posted. What we do know right now is that effectively it looks like that the attacks were largely drone strikes. There was some talk that there was some missiles involved. It doesn't seem like that's 100%. It doesn't seem like that may have been the case. It looks like it was entirely a drone-based attack. And just to give you guys a reference point here, this is where Isfahan is, right here in central Iran, like pretty much directly like central Iran. Not quite, but as you can see, it's very deep in the country. And there's been a lot of speculation that this city in particular was chosen for an attack by Israel is because they have a lot of military assets there. And not only that, this is where a substantial amount of the Iranian nuclear program is based out of. So part of this, and again, this is speculation, people are saying this is Israel telling Iran, hey, if we wanted to do more, if we wanted to mess with your nuclear capabilities and do more, we could, but this is us not going as hard as we could. And now as we're talking, and this is according again to Iranian officials, they're saying that there has been no damage to any military assets or to the nuclear program at large from this attack. So let's move on here. I got some footage. This is from the BBC Persia. This is of the initial attacks being shot down. All right, so let's play this for you guys. Not going to play any audio because there's really not much to play. You can't even see anything in that one. These ones are better, but they take a little bit of time to, there you go. You can see some of the explosions in the sky. This is not the best footage that the BBC got in its hands, but we can definitely see some of the explosions happening in the sky there. This video has no sound. Not like it mattered anyway. But yeah, you can see that the air defenses are being activated and they're definitely shooting at something up there. Okay, so that's pretty much that. Give you guys an idea of exactly what this attack looked like. When I was first hearing about this, let's just say I was getting very worried. And honestly, I'm still incredibly worried. I'm slightly less worried than I was a couple hours ago. But at first I thought like, this is it. This is the big attack. Again, this seems to be more of a warning attack. That being said, I really don't think Iran is going to take this lying down. So here's a really quick recap from 3 hours ago. This is from Al Jazeera. Not necessarily my favorite source to use for issues happening so close to the Middle East. That being said, they do have a very good live feed of what is happening right now. that is quite up to date, so I have been appreciating that. So again, from 3 hours ago, here's the quick recap. Iran state media says air defense systems have shot down 3 drones near the central city of Isfahan. There has been no reported damage to the nuclear site and military base nearby. The U.S. media, quoting U.S. officials, are reporting that it was an Israeli attack, but there has been no comment by the Israeli military. This is still the case as of recording. Syrian state media says Israel carried out a missile strike targeting an air defense unit in southern Syria, causing material damage. Israeli officials had promised to hit back after Iran sent drones and missiles towards Israel on April 13th. The attack was a response for the bombing of the Iranian diplomatic mission in Syria on April 1st that killed 7 Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps members. So initially, we also had reports of damage and attacks coming out of Iraq. I haven't been able to verify that, but it does look like that both Iran and Syria have been struck. We also had Antony Blinken come out and give a statement. He is the U.S. General Secretary, and he basically said nothing of import. All that he said is that the U.S. was not involved, we knew about this, and we're going to try and work on de-escalation. So basically nothing. And that's really all we know so far. Most that is coming out right now from this feed is just like analysis, and it's like, oh, why is happening? What are we doing? What should we do? Blah, 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 blah. So a lot of people might be wondering what is going on and why exactly Israel is attacking Iran in this fashion. As alluded to in some of the articles that we covered up to this point, on April 13th, Iran actually attacked Israel itself in an attack which did absolutely no damage and was like one of the weirdest choreographed and telegraphed attacks that I've ever seen in my entire life. It's going to have some background footage for you guys. This is from the Crux. This is why Iranian Shahed drones are so difficult to track and destroy. In any case, so basically what happened in this initial attack from Iran is that they sent these Shahed drones. They sent quite a considerable number of them flying over from Iran to Israel, and they basically telegraphed this entire thing as it was happening. And they told everybody, like, we're attacking with these drones, they're coming on over, this is the route they're going to take, this is how many we're sending, and this is why we are doing this attack. It was super weird, to be quite honest. Like, it really felt like we are doing this because we feel like we are forced to do this, or we have to do this. We'll get back there because there's still a further deeper step as to why Iran launched this attack in the first place. Anyway, my point here being is that Iran sent all these drones over. They telegraphed this attack very heavily, and as a result, I believe it was like 99% of the drones and missiles were intercepted en route, and it ended up in, I think it was like 0 damage. No one was killed. Nothing was destroyed, anything like that. So it was a very weird attack, right? It was like, again, like I said, super telegraphed. They let everybody know why they were doing it and what was happening. And to go back to that, why, another thing that was alluded to is that the reason why Iran took this step in the first place is because that Israel decided that it was going to strike and kill an embassy in Syria. And this embassy also happened to have a couple of high-ranking officials in the Iranian military, and I believe 2 of them died. And obviously, Iran not too happy about this, not too happy about losing some of their top generals. So they decided that they were going to retaliate against Israel for that attack on their embassy in Syria. And now this attack, which has happened over the evening, is a retaliatory attack for the Shahed drone attack, which happened on the 13th. So long story short now, and this is part of the reason why I am so extremely worried and starting to really hold my breath on this one, is that we are full bore on that ladder of escalation, right? We are now in that tit for tat segment where we've had Israel do their first attack. And by the way, this attack on a Syrian embassy is completely outside the bounds of international law for Israel. This is completely something they have no precedent and no legal right to do. So I think it's important to note that. So it gives me a little bit more sympathy for the Iranian position feeling like they have to retaliate for this attack, which killed their generals, feeling like they had to do something. I personally think that, yes, you have to do something if you're Iran, though this to me would not be the method of retaliation which I chose, because this just opens the door for Israel to do whatever they want to you, which they did. So anyway, we are on that full bore ladder of escalation, and I don't see how either of these countries can get off of it right now, because just before this attack happened, the Iranian foreign minister came out and said, if Israel does anything to us, we are going to come down with the full weight of our military and the full weight of resources available to us. So obviously, coming out and saying something like that, you got to put your money where your mouth is, because you guys were just attacked. So now we're seeing and we're waiting with bated breath. What is Iran going to do? So yeah, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, guys. This is really bad. This is definitely the worst that things have been since the Ukraine war. This is worse than when things started up in Gaza. This has the potential to really spiral out of control into something extremely deadly very quickly. So yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. Right now, the ball is definitely in Iran's court. They were attacked directly by a foreign country on their own soil. And because of this now, especially because this attack is on their own soil, they reported it in their news media. They have to do something, right? They have to show their people that they aren't just going to take an attack like this lying down. So I definitely think Iran is going to do something. I don't know what that thing is going to be, but we're teetering on the edge of some sort of full-blown war between Iran and Israel. There's been this grinding proxy war between Iran and Israel for at least a decade now anyway, and it is now showing the very real possibility of turning into a hot war. So with as much of this kind of backstory as we can out there, I want to take some time to look at the Middle East from our geopolitical chessboard and see where the pieces lie, who might have an advantage, and see if we can parse out any kind of meaningful details. Because as I mentioned before, Israel and Iran are already in a proxy war and have been for quite some time. And the intricacies of this kind of web of alliances and what Iran has done in response to Israeli dominance and U.S. assistance in the region has been quite fascinating, at least in my opinion. So from the geopolitical chessboard perspective, Iran's biggest problem and the thing they want to stop the most is their two greatest enemies in the region working together and forming a coalition against them. And those two greatest enemies are Saudi Arabia and Israel. Iran has been one of the most vehemently anti-Semitic, anti-Israel states in the region ever since effectively the Iranian Revolution. So it's not surprising that they and Israel don't get along. And then, of course, they don't get along with Saudi Arabia because they happen to be the main heads, the perceived heads of the Sunni religion, the Sunni section of Islam, whereas Iran is the main predominant country that represents the Shiite section of Islam. And famously, these two sections of Islam do not get along very well. So Iran is trying to keep both of those countries at bay and trying to contain them both. And again, like I said before, the one thing they do not want is those countries working together. But for a while, it looked like that was exactly what was going to happen, that Israel and Saudi Arabia were being driven together by the sort of geopolitical forces, and they looked like they were on track to form some sort of military cohesive alliance, which would be extremely threatening to Iran. So let me pull out the old marker here, and let's draw some lines on the map. So let me draw. So we have Iran, of course. And Iran has numerous proxies in the region, which it brings into its own coalition. Iraq right now being its predominant proxy since the fall of Saddam Hussein. And with the Americans withdrawing from Iraq, that has left a power vacuum, which has allowed Iran to effectively step right in there and bring Iraq onto their side. Iraq, effectively an Iranian proxy. Moving up, we have Syria, which is another member of the Iranian coalition, Syria has relied on Iran extensively, and more specifically, Bashar al-Assad has relied on Iran extensively to keep his government in power. And because of that, he can look to Iran for support. And then conversely, Iran can look to Syria for support as well. So Syria is in the Iranian coalition. And then we have Lebanon as well, home of Hezbollah, one of the most trained and fiercest Islamic militias in the region. And they are very close with Iran and receive a ton of funding and training and support from them. So that is the main Iranian coalition. And then in addition, they have another partner, which they have relied on and funded extensively, and that is the Houthi rebels in Yemen. Iran has used them again to basically shut down and threaten trade going through the Red Sea. And they have used the Houthis' strategic position to their advantage to leverage any kind of pressure they can. So then, after that, there is the Israeli coalition. We can do them in white. So Israel has pretty good standings with a lot of their neighbors. Jordan is very cozy in Israel's sphere of influence. And then right next door to them, they also have Egypt, which they are very close to. These two countries get along quite well. And I would say this is right now Israel's within the region core sphere of influence, mainly reserved for its neighbors and other close allies. Then we'll talk about the Saudi Arabian coalition. We'll do them in green. So obviously they have Saudi Arabia and pretty much the entire Arabic Peninsula as a whole is the Saudi Arabian coalition, including Kuwait as well. And Saudi Arabia maintains pretty effective control over the entirety of the Arabian Peninsula and dominates its neighbors on the peninsula as well, with the exception of the one holdout that Iran has, which is the Houthi rebels in Yemen. Oops, I did forget one last little outpost for Iran. That is. It's pretty tough. It's Gaza, and there we go. Little tiny outpost there. In any case, so Iran's number one concern is to ensure that the Saudi Arabian and Israeli coalitions in the region don't work together and put pressure on theirs. And as stated before, this looked like exactly what was happening as the United States became less and less interested in what was happening in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia started looking more towards Israel as their security guarantor, and Israel was also happy to bring a powerful, prosperous Muslim nation onto its side and kind of be friends with them. It was a very mutually beneficial relationship for them both. And it really seemed like these two coalitions were going to work together. This was one of the big things that the Abraham Accords was trying to spearhead, was effectively a partnership between these coalitions, which would allow the United States to take a much bigger step back and hands-off approach to security in the Middle East. But everything changed when Hamas attacked on October 7th, and that changed the geopolitical calculation considerably. Because despite the fact that Hamas is tentatively within the Iranian coalition, the fact that the Palestinian plate has been such an ongoing issue and historical issue in the Middle East makes it one of those issues that cuts across the entire Muslim world. And virtually the entire Muslim world has a great deal of sympathy and support for the plight of the Palestinian people. And so, as a result of Israel's invasion of Gaza and the heavy-handed tactics that they have used, the Abraham Accords are falling apart. Right now, Saudi Arabia is not really looking at Israel as an actual potential ally, because the second that Saudi Arabia says, hey, we're going to ally with Israel, their internal population is going to revolt against them because they're going to feel like they're leaving their brothers in the lurch effectively. And I don't know if you guys watched the Caspian Report, but I highly would recommend you guys watch the Caspian Report, one of the best geopolitical channels out there. He made a really great point that I didn't even think about, that effectively what Iran did by supporting Hamas and doing everything they could to elevate their October 7th attack, he made the point that what Iran has done is effectively sacrificed a pawn on the geopolitical chessboard. Because realistically, like within Gaza, it doesn't have an important strategic position, doesn't have a lot of resources, but by sacrificing that pawn, they blew up the Abraham Accords, effectively put a gigantic wedge in between Saudi Arabia and Israel working together. But that brings us to the other member of the equation, which is Israel itself. And Israel itself has obviously known that there has been a big proxy war between Iran and Israel brewing for a long time, that Iran has used its militias and partners within the region to harass Israel and pull their resources to their absolute extent. Israel has known this, I think, for quite some time. And right now, what I think they're trying to do is trying to provoke a more conventional type of one-on-one conflict. And the reason for this, I think, is twofold. One, obviously, Israel has a much more technologically advanced military, plus the unwavering support, which has been effectively reiterated by the United States today, of the United States for Israel and whatever they would want to do. So I think Israel sees itself as having the advantage in some sort of conventional warfare. I think that would be correct. And then the secondary reason that they are trying to provoke Iran is that Israel can see that Iran has been doing a lot of the heavy lifting through its proxies, not through Iran itself. It's been having proxies in the region doing a lot of work against Israel. And I think Israel is effectively tired of it. And they are saying, hey, listen, if you guys want to go. Let's bring it one-on-one, face-to-face. Stop hiding behind these proxies. Stop hiding behind these militias. Let's actually fight it out. So I do think part of what is happening and part of this aggressive Israeli stance against Iran is them trying to provoke a more conventional conflict and a more conventional fight. Because again, and I think rightly, they see themselves having the advantage in such a conflict. And now the question is, do I think that Israel will be successful in provoking Iran? And honestly, I do think they will be successful because Iran wants to rely on its proxies as much as possible, and Israel wants to fight Iran directly as much as possible. And I think that Iran has effectively run the limit of what it can use its proxies for. It might be able to get one good strike coming out of Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hezbollah has been pretty quiet. Israel has been shilling the crap out of them. They haven't really done anything yet. So I can see them using Hezbollah to do something, right? And that's really the last kind of militia they could burn, right? Hamas is effectively gone, or if it's not gone, it's engaged in a fight for its survival. The Houthis are just doing their own thing in the Red Sea. And then, of course, Iraq is a barely functional state. Syria is a barely functional state. Lebanon is close by to Israel and has Hezbollah, which is one of the, again, most well-trained Islamic militias in the region, and they haven't really been doing anything yet. I can see that there might be a time where they get activated and they have something big planned. But once that's over, Iran's got no more militias and they have to go toe-to-toe and face-to-face. And again, I think Iran has known that as well. And for them, they know that the only chance they have in some sort of conventional fight against Israel is if Saudi Arabia and their allies stay out. And in that regard, I do think Iran will be successful. I don't think right now Saudi Arabia has any interest in getting involved in this shit show. Right now, it seems like they just want to do their own thing, build that weird line city they're working on in the middle of nowhere. Since the escalatory ladder has started, all of Saudi Arabia's allies have just come out and said, we need to de-escalate. We need to de-escalate. This is getting bad. And that tells me that they don't want to get involved in the fight. They have no interest in getting involved in the fight. They want to bring things from a 10 down to a 0. Which again makes sense because getting involved in the fight on behalf of either side really doesn't make any sense at all. For Saudi Arabia, neutrality right now makes the most sense for them to just sit and do their thing. One of the things which has happened immediately in the aftermath of this attack is that oil spiked right up, And I'm sure that Saudi Arabia is loving that. They have no complaints about that. So if anything, having Iran and Israel just a saber rattle and maybe even duke it out is actually beneficial to them right now. The one thing Saudi Arabia would need to look out for is if Iran was somehow successful in dominating Israel, then obviously they would look to Saudi Arabia and then dominate them in turn. So that's the one thing that Saudi Arabia needs to be cognizant of, is that if it looks like Iran is becoming too powerful, then they need to abandon their neutrality and side with Israel, or Iran's going to be coming for them next. And then that's, of course, not even talking about other powers. One country, I think, who is ecstatic right now about what is happening and about these attacks is, of course, Russia. I think Russia is super happy. Not only have they been happy since October 7th and the world has started to turn away from what is happening in Ukraine, more looking towards Gaza, not only have they been happy about that chain of events, but they are happy that Iran is getting involved because they want to divide the American interest as much as possible. And they have really taken the forefront in this goal by invading Ukraine. They have obviously taken the brunt of the American attention, NATO's attention. But now, 2 years on, Russia has weathered that initial storm, and they want the United States to be looking at as many places besides Ukraine. Obviously, having the attack on October 7th focused in on the Middle East, and now with this escalatory ladder, they are now, I think, laser focused in on what's happening in the Middle East and probably don't really give much of a crap about what's happening in Ukraine at all. And also by Russia bringing in Iran into a kind of war economy, by having their main ally in the Middle East move to more of a war economy footing, that will help them because they can just continue to get war material through Iran sent straight up to them that they can then use in Ukraine. So this is something that will bring Russia and Iran closer together, in my opinion, and of course divide the United States' attention. And right now what's happening is I'm almost getting like a fall of Roman Empire vibes right now, where, you know, none of the barbarian tribes, quote unquote, overwhelmed the Roman Empire on their own. It was this slow process of like one tribe trying to push here, and then the Romans would try and stop them. And then while their focus was trying to push the Goths out, the Huns would come in. And while their resources were focused on stopping one tribe, the other tribe would come in, and then their resources would get continually divided. And then another tribe would notice, hey, the Romans' interests are divided right now. If we push here, we would have a pretty good chance of overwhelming them. And then that just starts snowball effect as more and more tribes start to realize the Romans can't hold them back anymore. So Russia was the first, quote unquote, barbarian tribe. Sorry, I don't like to use those kind of terms, but it's just for the metaphor to test the Roman Empire. And they got the Roman Empire attention laser focused on them. And then the next one on the list, Iran, said, huh, their attention is focused here. Maybe we can try and push some of our own interests, and the United States won't be as keen to intervene because they're already focused on what's going on in Ukraine. And now, of course, I see maybe China looking at this and thinking, okay, now the Roman Empire's, proverbial Roman Empire's, attention is divided between Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and now if we push in Taiwan, it'll be on three fronts, and that could be the breaking point. So that's what I'm seeing right now, is that a lot of countries who are interested in breaking U.S. hegemony are now testing that hegemony and seeing if enough of them can push those boundaries, if they can actually break it. And I think they could, though it's definitely not a guarantee. It would be something like they would have to really work together and coordinate a lot more if they wanted to break U.S. hegemony, but we'll see. But it's something I think that they could theoretically do if they all work together, play their cards right. And with that's going to bring us pretty much to the end of our show. I want to talk a little bit about the background and what the main factors pushing us towards this major conflict in the Middle East. But in terms of what's actually going to happen now, I really don't know. And I'll be real with you guys. I am extremely worried about what Iran's next move is going to be. I don't think they can just like write it off and just say, okay, we're not going to do anything now, especially because they've said basically that if Israel does anything, they'll come down with the full weight of their available forces or whatever they said. Exactly. I can't remember the exact phrase, but you understand what I'm trying to say. So the ball is in Iran's court. The whole world is watching. The whole world, at least I think, is sitting with bated breath, hoping that this doesn't escalate into something serious. I was hoping that it wouldn't escalate into something serious when I heard that the drones were flying over on April 13th. But here we are now on the next rung of the ladder. And I imagine that in another 5 or 6 days, we'll be talking about the next rung on the ladder, which has been achieved. And so on and so forth until we're talking about a real hot war. I think that I think that's what's in the cards, is some sort of real conventional conflict in the Middle East between Israel and Iran. And of course, Israel itself is hoping that the United States will help heavily in such a conflict and maybe even do most of the heavy lifting for them. That, I think, is going to be a hard sell domestically. Because one of the things I've seen in the wake of the October 7th attack is on the right, there has been more and more of a cohort of conservatives who are abandoning Israel and saying that we don't need to give Israel all this foreign aid. They don't need all this support from us. They're big boys now. They can solve their own problems. So it could be a real possibility that this is the breaking point for American support for Israel, that a war with Iran might be a bridge too far. But then again, there are plenty of politicians in the United States who have been salivating at a war with Iran or at the prospect of a war with Iran for quite some time. So again, that's why I don't know what could happen. It's an extremely worrying time, and there's really nothing we can do except just watch it all unfurl in front of us together, because it's not like any of us have any power to really stop what's happening in the world, but at least we can talk about it. Okay, with that, I want to thank you guys for watching. This is going to bring us to the end of our show. Unfortunately, another Black Pill episode. It's a Black Pill time, and I think it's going to stay that way for at least another couple years. So anyway, with that, I want to thank you guys for watching. This has been the Comrade, signing off for now. Until next time, you guys take care.